Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you live every Thursday from 7 until 8, and we talk about your business, the business, a business, the business you want to have, the business you're in. And we always have great guests who come on and discuss their expertise, their entrepreneurs, their professionals, and they give excellent advice. They have perspectives that you may not have considered, and tonight will be no different. We have a great guest lined up. Before we introduce our guest, I never take this journey alone. You have to say hello to my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Hi, everyone. Lori Miller, LGC Interior Design. And again, I'm going to remind everyone, I'm still running for Woman of the Year. There's still time to fundraise. So we have a comedy show coming up May 15th, which is only 2 days from now. We have Creedence Clearwater Revival. So get your tickets now, please. That would be great. It's only $15, and it's Zoom. So we have 4 more weeks. Donate, pledge. Anything that you can help with is great. Leukemia, we want to fight leukemia and on a mission to fight cancer. So we're, again, Thursday nights at 7 o'clock, and I want to thank our guest tonight, who happens to be one of my favorite designers, someone who I follow very closely and who I go to when I have all of my questions. And don't blush, Patrick. I'm going to introduce Patrick Hamilton, and I am going to let Patrick introduce himself. So, Patrick, not in the spotlight, but you're on. So if you want to tell everyone who you are, what you do, and how to find you, that would be great.
Hey, guys. I'm glad I'm not on video because I am blushing, Lori. Thank you. You're always super kind. So I'm Patrick J. Hamilton, and I have my own sole proprietor of Patrick James Hamilton Designs here in Manhattan, and I have been in the world of interior designs officially and professionally since 2008. And I specialize in residential work, but I've done a few restaurant things and lobby things and that kind of stuff, primarily residential.
So interesting, Patrick. You say that you've been in since 2008. Did you do something before you did interior design?
Yeah, I was a graphic designer and a creative director for an advertising agency that brought me up to New York City from South Florida, where I was born and raised. I'm a Miami boy, and it was definitely a career change, and it was a career change at a very odd time. I think. Although last year was probably more odd, 2008, if you remember, in Manhattan and around the country was not the best of economies. Change sort of happened to me. Change came to me, and I didn't know whether I was sort of disillusioned with advertising at that point. When they said, when you finish your breakfast, you can go home. But I was kind of curious about whether I, you know, was burnt out in that industry or, whether I wanted to do something different. So I took that old advice of, you know, do what you love. And so there were two things that I really loved at the time. And one was writing and the other was interior design. I always loved interior design, and I had been, prior job to that, I had been art director for Florida Home and Garden magazine. So I thought I'm going to take a break from advertising. I'm going to just try out these two loves, and for the first year and a half, I made my living primarily as a writer, as an advertising copywriter, and to work with a couple boutique agencies, and that was my primary source of income. And then slowly but surely, the interior design practice sort of rose to the top and took over as the primary moneymaker. So I write a little bit still, but I write mostly for myself. But that's what I've been doing. That was a bit of the journey.
That's, yeah, I mean, everyone has, like, an interesting career path if you've passed 30 years old, right? And some past 20. you were still in the creative vein, but, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, but what was that transition like? Was it scary? Did you still, you know, keep your job while you were doing that? Was it easy to get a writing job?
So the interesting thing, the other advice, the other sage advice that I took about sort of when you're between jobs, I told everyone that I was looking for a job. You know, you sort, mm-hmm. of, sort of put it out there. And it was funny the way it happened. I had worked with various people through my year. I was with that company in one form or another for 11 years. So it was kind of a history. And I put it out there, even to people I knew and even to people who knew I had been, you know, let go from the company, and even people I thought knew that, you know, that I could make my living as a writer. And, but I told someone, you know, that exact thing. And she said, you know, oh, my husband, and even though I thought she knew that I did quite a bit of the writing that we were working on in the agency, I think she always saw me as the graphic design part of it and didn't know that I was the writer part. So part of that connection was just being clear about what I wanted out of it, you know. And she said, oh, my husband runs a boutique agency, advertising agency, and he's always looking for great copywriters. And I thought, you know, that's kind of her to say. I probably won't ever hear anything back from her or him. And like a week later, okay. He's like, let's work together. And I did some amazing stuff with him, branding for the city of Palm Springs, branding for the city of San Antonio. And it was pretty amazing. So that's how that came about. The interior design was a little bit less of a straight line, but that's how the writing connection sort of took over for a while.
That's pretty awesome. You know, and I guess it's partly luck, right? Because if you hadn't known her or who knows what, but it's also skill set because you put yourself out there, you know, said exactly what you wanted, you had the clear direction, right? Which is always good to know because a lot of people lose their jobs and they're like, oh, I need a job. But it's never that clarity or that specific.
Right.
You know, so it's always a good tactic to know and have under your belt. And I've been taking a lot of classes, and that's one of the things that they say now, too, is when you're marketing, right, be really clear about who you're marketing to. Don't just say, well, I want a client, right?
Right.
Just be careful what you wish for.
Yes, exactly.
But paint the picture of, you know, the client that you do want and even, you know, what they look like. Why not?
Right.
So, and you did just that. You said, this is what I want. This is the job I want. This is what I'm skilled at. And this will be perfect for me.
Yeah. And
look at that.
And I think I was a little, you know, I was super confident in my writing abilities. And I was a little less so originally of my interior design abilities. I always loved it. I knew I could do it. I had done it for friends and I had started to do it for, I actually started to find clients off of Craigslist originally, just sort of little jobs to get my feet wet on it. And then I had a connection for a while with Apartment Therapy, and that worked really well, apartmenttherapy.com. It was my first exposure to sort of online communities, which was kind of eye-opening in its own right. But I won their first, they had a small, cool, they have almost annual, I think last year they didn't do it, but they have an annual small, cool apartment contest. And I used it as a catalyst to sort of whip my own apartment into shape, and I entered and I won. So that was something that I could then kind of leverage. It gave me photography. It sort of gave me some credentials. And at the time, Apartment Therapy was doing things really, really well, and they were sort of a pioneer in the online, you know, it wasn't really a blog, it wasn't really a website, it was something in between. And they were always sort of at the keyword search, and they were always, you know, they always showed up on Google searches. And so, you know, that connection, although it was a little bit more informal, Although for a while I did write for them as well, but that was something that I was able to leverage and sort of gave me a little bit of credibility. And that also led to some of this I haven't thought about in a while, but it's all coming back to me now, Lori. That actually led to an appearance on Home and Garden Television, because they were also, Apartment Therapy was also on their radar, and it led to my first appearance on Home and Garden Television, HGTV.
Wow, and we were just talking about that, right?
I know, it's like I sort of hadn't thought about that. Like, I don't think about these things sometimes as a straight line anymore, but like, oh, those two things were connected.
Right. This is how I did that.
Yeah.
So for our audience, you have an excellent roster, a bio of different things. So you've been in House Beautiful. You have your degree from Rhode Island School of Design. This was the Small Space, Big Style, HGTV, and Rate My Space. You've also done a number of charity events. I mean, you're Mr. Charity. and I do try to aspire to you.
Yeah, it's
so,
been, art has been really good for me for a number of reasons. You know, it's always important, as you know, because you're in the thick of it, of giving back, and
right.
You know, that's always something that when you control your own career, you know, I'm a sole proprietor, you can kind of control some things, and I've done a couple show houses, and I've had a long run with one of my favorite charities here in Manhattan, Housing Works, and
right.
I did Design and a Dime for them for 7 years. Let me think about the math on the straight line on that one. But I think about 7 years. So.
Yeah, and for our audience who doesn't know, you want to talk a little bit about Housing Works or what they do, or you know, being in the Design on a Dime, because that was pretty fascinating. You know, pretty fun. It's actually an amazing event.
Yeah, It's crazy. Did you do it more than once?
I did it twice.
Twice, yeah. As you know, it's kind of a crazy thing. So the shorthand of it is, a group of anywhere between 25 to 26 to there might be up even higher now, group of designers all curate and collect a booth's worth of merchandise from vendors and showrooms, and it can be vintage stuff and art and things like that, and then it's all sold off for charity. So it's really interesting. It's a 10 by 12 booth, I think, and you pack it to the rafters and try to make it look like something, and then it sells all off. 100% of the proceeds go to Housing Works, which is a great organization that provides housing. They originally began for the HIV/AIDS community, but they've expanded that a bit over the years. And the root of their mission is that which I think has always spoken to me as an interior designer, is that the housing and a mailing address and a place to come home to is restorative and curative and important in people's health. Actually, you know, they have some amazing statistics on how people's health is linked to having some place to return to every night, and it's something we take for granted. And after a year of being home all the time, it's like an interesting thing to think about.
Right, very much so. Very much so. Mm. So also in being successful, now you're gonna know I really am your stalker. There is one of the movies with our ever wonderful J-Lo, one of your rooms or your apartments was also in one of her movies, correct?
That was super funny. I did an apartment for the, an apartment rework, redesign for the owners of Krypton, the fabric the fabric company here in Manhattan. They have a couple places, and I was happy to work with them on their Manhattan apartment. And they had worked with a designer before, and they were looking for something different. And so we ended up on this scheme, and I worked with them in their apartment, you know, with all the things that you do. And and yeah, I was watching Hustlers, the movie, not the club. And I was like, wait a minute, rewind. There was a room I didn't work on, but I remembered something very specific about it. And it's like it flashed on the screen. It caught my eye. And, you know, with modern technology, it allows us to pause everything. Like that's their apartment. And then I started to watch it a little bit more, and then they have a party scene in the apartment, and it's very funny to see it. They restaged a bit of it, but it was super funny to see. And there's a beautiful – we did a beautiful rug with Joseph Carini, who does amazing – he's one of my favorite people in the industry, and he does amazing rugs. And I actually just saw him today. But he did a beautiful rug, which they kept down. And there's a scene where they're like dancing around and they're spilling their champagne on the floor, I guess. I'm like, oh my God, please don't let them spill actual champagne on that carpet.
Right. God, my heart would be in my chest.
Like, even if it's J-Lo, no, it's still no good.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's still a beautiful carpet. Don't spill it. Don't touch it.
But yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get any royalties from the movie.
Well, that's right. You still do good work. So it's all relative.
I brought the images out around Oscar time to try to, you know, like tag J-Lo in it, but nothing, the phone didn't ring, sadly.
Oh, sadly. So now, in running your business, are you the chief cook and bottle washer? Do you have assistants? Do you have people who, you know, work with you? How do you work?
It's just me. It's just me and a network of professionals I trust. So, yeah, from the marketing to the final product, I bring helpers in on installations and things like that. But yeah, it's just me, which is a blessing and a curse, right?
Right, exactly. A little bit of both. And how many projects do you take on at one time?
It depends on the scope of them. I try to have, because I do a lot of work for people in apartments and in rentals who want to, you know, basically want to refurnish or redesign, but they can't necessarily do construction. But then I also do full-on, you know, gut renovations of entire apartments. So probably like two of those bigger renovations a year, and then a lot of the other kinds of projects that may be like one room or a little bit of construction, but not necessarily like a gut renovation. But
right. How do you think, or how do you clients find you?
It's primarily, other than the super early Craigslist days, it's been word of mouth. And then, you know, the other interesting thing about connection, so is that we were talking about design at a dime. So, you know, obviously, aside from the philanthropic, you know, efforts of a charity, I think we all enter into those, whether it's that or the Holiday House show house that I've done, or, you know, the Savannah show house. You enter into those with with some thoughts on maybe this will bring me some work. The first show house I did, that wasn't my expectation. And I talked to a lot of other designers about what the expectation should be in show houses. And so I think my understanding of what that could translate into was pretty clear. But in completely lost my train of thought. Where were we going? Where's that train going, Lori?
How do you
it's
get
been
your
a lot. Oh, yeah, there we go. There we go, that part. And so, but again, some of these things are not always a straight line. So I did Design on a Dime. The one of the years that I did Design on a Dime, Valspar was a paint sponsor. And that led to a connection with Valspar. And Valspar then approached me a little bit later with a advertorial thing with Traditional Home. I think it was House Beautiful at the time. I might have run a couple places. But we did an advertorial. There was a one-page ad. And I got one of my best clients ever out of that exposure, which was really funny because I asked her when she called me, like, how did you find me? And she said, oh, I saw you in House Beautiful. I'm like, okay. So that worked. So, you know, then it's word of mouth, and then it's also, you know, working with people who've worked with them, working on multiple projects with the same people, you know, because they move or because they go from, you know, one room to another, things like that. But, yeah, primarily word of mouth.
Pretty interesting. As a business owner, right, and they always say interior designers never make great business owners or creative people don't make great business owners. That's how Ted and I got together. Is there any advice that you would give someone who's running their own business or some of the challenges or anything like how you handled it or maybe one of your worst moments as a designer, one of your best moments as a business owner?
Yeah, I think, because I never worked for another studio or never worked with another designer, it was a really steep learning curve for me about the business side of it and about the pricing models. And, you know, there's I think we all price everything super differently, which I think is a point of frustration for clients, actually. You know, they can't get three quotes and sort of get apples to apples comparison because we all price things so differently and, you know, flat fee, hourly rate, square footage, you know, markups, no markups, markups on this, you know, it's sort of a pool of things. I think my advice is to sort of, you know, learn about it, like to just educate yourself about what the process is. I would say, you know, work with some financial people, go to some seminars, talk to the people on the business side of it. But, you know, there are also great interior designers who have a business background. And, you know, so it's, I don't think it's mutually exclusive at all.
The business and the design, you mean? Or
right.
The finance
yeah,
and the design? No,
yeah,
it's not
that.
Mutually.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
that creative people aren't good business people.
I think we can be. We just don't learn it usually. So, you know,
right.
I think your advice is excellent, is to talk to the people, you know, like Ted, you, or in finance, you know, who you can kind of get a plan and learn how to do that and how to run the business successfully.
Yeah. And then also, you know,
what is that?
Go ahead.
No, keep going.
You know, and then also there's, you know, I belong to a couple of professional interior design groups on social media. And, you know, we talk about pricing and best case scenarios and contracts fairly often. So that's been super helpful as well.
That ever encourage designers to collaborate on projects? I'm thinking two things. What you just said is a group of designers, and I'm also thinking, you know, what if a designer, as you were saying, has a strong finance background and they just went into design? does that encourage people to complementary skills and work together on a project? Does that happen?
I would say that, like, some firms that are, you know, two people, I think sometimes that happens because one of them is the business mind and the other one is the design mind, or they're both, you know, they're both, but one's a little more of one and one's a little bit more of the other. So I would say in, like, team and partnership firms that, yeah, that's probably, you know, like, sort of the genesis of some of those partnerships. I would also say that I have some great friends that I met down in Savannah when I was doing that show house, and I'm a little foggy in the details, but they run sort of a collective group space of designers who do their own individual work. But I think they pool the resources, and, you know, there's not a design center down there, so they have to go to Atlanta to get stuff and to see showrooms and things like that. So they've sort of created a mutual like sample library, and they pool their resources. I just thought that was a really great idea. I think New York is a little competitive for that kind of group think, but it's an intriguing idea for sure. And I think that way you could pull your resources and have someone, you know, to do the coaching and the financial stuff and the accounting and things like that. But I was super intrigued to learn about that group down there.
Interesting.
That's what I was going to say.
If,
interesting.
Does that really require, like, extra negotiation or cooperation skills? Because what if you have two designers that come together and they have kind of different philosophies towards coordinating colors and schemes, like not just colors, but, you know, I'm going to use landscapes for inside the house, like how the layout of furniture and lighting. I mean, what if their philosophies conflict? I mean, is that, do they sort of just combine the two, or one has to win over the other, or they just need new collaborative skills to make it work?
Yeah, I think the key to all of it, whether you're working with a partner or not, is collaboration. Because I always say that, you know, I don't design necessarily for my clients. I collaborate with them. So back to the Savannah model, I'm not quite sure that they team up on projects per se, but I'm sure that they, you know, we all, and Laurie would probably agree to this, we all get stumped, and you know, working on my own, there are times when I think, oh, I really want to bounce this off somebody. And that's where some of those Facebook groups come in too, because there's quite a bit of that in a kitchen group I belong to, and people will share plans and say, like, you know, this one detail has really stumped me. But I think, you know, collaboration is the key. And I think it's always tricky with design because there's, you know, always a little bit of that creative ownership that people want and don't necessarily want to give up. And, you know, there are the ego does come into play. So that's why I said I'm not sure that would all work that well in Manhattan, in and around Manhattan. But I think it's collaborative. And I also think different designers have different skill sets. I knew another designer who was in a, you know, two-person firm, and partner was, you know, like the textile queen. She was like, knew that was her thing, her, you know, schemes. And I think he maybe approached, you know, the space planning a little bit more. So I think there are definitely ways to partner with somebody based on different people's skill sets. Because, you know, some people just can see a furniture plan like the minute they walk in a room. And some people can see like the finished color scheme when they walk in a room, and you know, and I think we all wear all those hats, but I think some people come at it differently. And I think if you could find someone who you know, filled in the gaps on the parts that you didn't do well, or didn't feel super comfortable with or as comfortable with. I think that would be a really interesting way into it if you felt like, you know, teamwork was the best way to go.
Interesting. And that actually sounds like something that's transferable for any industry. We're talking about design, and designers are, I see them as like artists. So artists are proud of their work, and they may have a signature style to their work. And so I'm thinking, if you have two people who have their own distinct signature styles, and they're now trying to work together, it could be messy, or it could be what you're saying is, you know, you have someone to bounce ideas off of.
Right. Right. Yeah, you know, it can get messy just with clients. So there's always a potential for messy. And if people say otherwise.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it also depends on if you respect the other person's opinion. You know, like if you respect their skill set, because I've had, I've had assistants or people working for me, and, you know, quite frankly, even if their skill set was different, or, you know, I respected what they did, so we integrated it and it was amazing. But if I didn't respect how their thought processes went, then it became a disaster.
Right.
You know, so I think that plays into it as well.
And I think you have to be able to say, okay, I'm going into this because I have this deficit, or I have this area that's, you know, where my confidence isn't as high as other parts of the process. And, you know, I'm entering in this to lean on someone and learn from someone and keep an open mind that maybe their way is a better way than what I've been doing. There's always that possibility.
Exactly. And I will say, Patrick, that you are always open to, you know, at least for me, my experience has been that you've always been kind of open to other people's thoughts, or, you know, kind of gathering opinions, or letting people, sharing yours, you know, which is a nice quality.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I try. You know, I feel like, it's kind of cliche, but it's like I look at us as an industry and also as, you know, to a certain extent, a community. And I think that when we all figure it out communally, the product gets better. And I think the potential for profit gets better, because you know, we're all doing best practices, and we're all saying, okay, our time should be respected, and we should get paid for what we do. You know, if we say that communally, I think we all benefit from that, for sure.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So Patrick, any when you on work that? With your client, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lori.
No, I was talking to you, and you just answered. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. When you're working with your clients, Patrick, how much do you depend on their input when you're designing? Or like, is it a mix? Do you depend 100% on their input, on what they want, or do you just walk into a space, like you said, and you can just see the layout and you match up, you sort of assess the client and sort of take your vision and sort of juxtapose it with theirs, or do you just ignore them and say, this is what you want? I mean, so do you just take their, are you depending very much heavily on their input on what they want, or how do you work with clients normally?
So generally, you know, it is sort of, again, it's a blessing and a curse of like being able to walk into a space. Especially if it's a little harder, like someone shows you, you know, an empty space, a brand new apartment they've purchased, and you don't know them, and you've not seen the way they live, and you're sort of flying by the cues that they're giving you. It's much easier for me to walk into to see a space they've lived in or are living in, to know like what their comfort level is. Are they a risk taker? You know, But even so, I can still say, I can still point out the, if I'm going into a space that they want to rework or they want to redesign, it's like, you know, first impressions, especially by an interior designer, pretty clear cut. Like, oh my God, the rug, you know, first of all, we got to get you bigger rugs. Like, I don't always say those things right away, but I really love, I love all kinds of styles. So I really take my cues very heavily from the client. You know, if they want to be glam, then it's going to be a glam project. If they have an antique rug that they want to make a little bit, build the room around, but make it a little bit more modern, I'm on board. So that's what keeps it interesting for me is what the client brings to the table. The challenge, though, is the client doesn't always know what they want to bring to the table. They don't always see the connect the dots picture that I can sometimes see because of what they wear and this piece that they love and this piece that they don't love and, you know, images they've shown me. Sometimes they don't see the connections there. And I think, you know, most good designers can see those connections. But I think sometimes it's almost to a fault. I think I give a client maybe too long a leash sometimes on what their input can be or too many choices. But I really like to hear from them. I like to build it for them and around them because I always say that when I'm done, you shouldn't be able to tell that I did the room, but you should know exactly who's living in it.
Okay. I met a woman once who said a friend of her, she I think recently met a guy who was a designer, and he said, if you'll give me full rein, I'll design your entire apartment,
mm-hmm.
except I want to spend a week with you. I'm going to follow you everywhere you go.
Oh.
And he did that. He watched what she purchased and how she dressed and he watched her mannerisms, many things, and he said, now just sort of step aside and let me just do this for you. And he did, and she said she loved it.
Yeah,
I think clients like that.
I've come a little close. I would love to work. I would love to work that way more often. And also I think that's, you know, there's these myths about design, interior design, based on what people see on TV. And I think what people see on TV is, you know, this process where to a greater or lesser extent, the client is kind of removed from the process. Like we meet them at the beginning,
okay.
They give some input, they may, you know, sign off on a floor plan, and you know, you also don't know what happens behind the scenes, but the picture that's painted is like, and then they go away for, you know, 6 to 8 to 12 weeks, and they come back, and it's a beautiful reveal, and, you know, the client cries, and then everybody, then the crew goes home. But I actually, in some of my earlier projects, I had better luck with this whole, just let me do it. Like, we'll arrive at a few key things, you know. People always want to sit on a sofa. People always want to, you know, there's a couple of, you know, people have different priorities on what they want to touch, feel, and sign off on. But in a couple of my first projects, I'm like, okay, now I just finish it. Like, you go away, and I stockpile the stuff, and then I install. And I don't know whether it was weird early confidence or naivete or something like that, but somehow I've lost that a little bit along the way. Although I will say I worked with a very lovely woman who was and is still a great friend of mine, and she gave me sort of carte blanche after we arrived on, after she was sure that I was on the same page with her.
Okay.
And you know, we did that by looking at a couple things and palettes but she said, like, you know, I trust you and go for it. And I tell you, it was when clients do that, they get your best work. Because also it was like, oh my God, now I really can't screw any of this up because I don't have anybody to blame. So it was like a super interesting pressure thing. Like, oh my God, you know, I loved her to start with. And then I was like, I really can't, it's gotta be right for her. But, so I do think, you know, that sort of joking aside, I think when you arrive at some of the bigger pieces, the bigger points, and then just say, okay, you know, I hired you because I can't do it. And I hired you because, I trust you. Trust is a giant thing, and it doesn't come quickly and it doesn't come easily, for sure.
Yeah, so, it's interesting that you say that, Patrick, because I, too, earlier in my career had a much easier time of just doing things. But what I've noticed, I think, with the home shows, because when we started, there really wasn't. And like you said, you started with apartment therapy, which really mm-hmm. was the first kind of, you know, it was a publication and it was online. So people were really first really getting visuals of
right.
our industry, you know, and then the behind the scenes, and then, you know, it was trading spaces. So I think with the onset of all of that, people have become much more, I can do this myself. And
yeah.
when they give us free rein, it's, you know, all of our creativity. It's like, okay, go, 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 go. This is why you hired me.
Right.
So,
and then
in essence, it's kind of tying your hands and slowing down the process.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is, you know, the card that we as designers used to hold all the time with sourcing was like, you know, I would bring these mystery items to people that they couldn't find or get on their own. You know, we'd bring them into the sanctified showrooms that they couldn't get in unless they walked in with us. That whole landscape
right.
has changed, and the internet has changed, and you know, transparency has changed. People know exactly how much things cost and where stuff is coming from. And, you know, they're educated to a point, you know, but what's that saying about a little bit of knowledge? Like, so they're educated to a point. But sometimes they're not, you know, they're not looking at these things holistically. They're looking, I was kidding with someone the other day and I said, don't put the shopping cart before the horse when you're working on an interior design project, because like people want to say like, okay, you know, like let's buy something because I can put that in my cart. I can do that at night. I can look at this website. Like, tell
mm-hmm.
me what websites I should be looking at. It's like, it doesn't work that way.
At least
it doesn't work that way when you're working with me. So I think that has been like a drastic change, and more so for people who've been doing it way longer than I have, because 2008 wasn't that long ago. But the internet was roaring along then. But I think that part of it can't be underestimated. That like it's put a lot of the power and a lot of the knowledge, the raw ingredients into the hands of people. But you know, it's also like I always make a lot of cooking comparisons. It's like, okay, so you know where to get these fancy mushrooms, and you know where to get this red wine, and you know where to get this, like, you know, the best butcher in Manhattan. But do you know, like, can you then make, you know, the meal? And I think sometimes that's the part that people miss, and that's the best part of what you get out of working with a designer.
Interesting. How would you recommend someone assess a designer? So they're looking for one, and they're not sure how to go about even choosing one. So how do people do that?
That's a great question because it's such a personal, like on top of whether you like their style, you have to like them, like to spend time with them, because you're going to spend a lot of time with them. And you
mm-hmm.
have to feel comfortable with them. Look at as much of their work as you can. Interview them, because you're interviewing them for a job. You know, you're hiring them. It's a job interview. I think sometimes people don't think about that first meeting with a designer with that mindset. They're like, oh, I'm getting an interior designer. It's like, no, you're doing it. It's a job interview. And I think if more clients and more designers had that mentality about that first meeting or the first couple of meetings, I think the expectation might be set a little bit. But a lot of clients, like, don't think that this is like a hobby for us. A lot of clients have to be reminded occasionally that this is like how we make our living and how we make, you know, our rent. And it's like, because they think it's fun, they can do it, you know, they can sort of do it on their own, kind of. They have access to a lot of the same stuff that we do now. And I think, you know, I had more than one client say to me, like, oh, I want your job. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know if you want my job. Be careful what you wish for. But yeah, I think there's an idea about the business aspect of it that people don't necessarily apply to it. But it's a business and it's a transaction, and it's, and you know, those first meetings should be an interview process. But then also, like, again, I think that's where word of mouth comes back in. It's like, I think that's how people find, you know, people that they, because if someone has worked with you, they know what your process is like. They know what your strengths and weaknesses are to them, and they can describe that process, you know, better than you can in that kind of an interview setting. So,
okay, good. You mind if I go back to something you and Lori were discussing earlier, your past life as a writer? And has that helped you? And in what way, like, do you use that skill still? I mean, I hear you saying word of mouth supports mm-hmm. you, except you have this other skill. And how does that help you market your business?
Oh, so for sure. My sister is a writer. My sister is the most talented writer that I know. And she encouraged me. She was a voracious reader and then an excellent writer, and she encouraged me really early on to take as many writing classes as I possibly could. And it hit with me. I liked doing it. It came kind of easily, and I followed that all through my education. Even though I went to RISD, I took creative writing courses at Brown and things like that. And, the writing has been like giant. And because so much communication now happens through email. And so there's the marketing part of the writing for sure. And I can use that. And I do use that. And, you know, I blog occasionally. I don't blog as much as I would like to, but I like it because it's sort of long form and I don't get to do that too much. But the other part of the written communication is like expressing, you know, progress on a project or explaining something that's happened on the job site, or, you know, documenting different scenarios that a client during a renovation has to understand. So writing is like a huge tool for sure.
Okay. And as far as marketing, aside from blogging, I mean, have you engaged in any kind of marketing or PR that you've generated yourself?
I would sort of count social media in that way, because I do write a lot when I'm working in social media venues. I'm probably like a fairly long-winded Instagrammer as it goes. But I use writing to sort of, you know, demystify the process sometimes. But I think in demystifying the process, you help people understand that there is one, that there are steps, that there are like parts of it that aren't just like, ooh, I found this really cool chair. So I've been sharing a couple days in between, I've been sharing pictures from a recent project, and I've been sort of outlining what the scenario was, and I'm sharing before and afters, but I'm writing those things very specifically to educate people who may not ever have the wherewithal or the ability or the luxury of hiring an interior designer, who might want to take away some of those tips, and, you know, but they might not ever hire any of us. You know, I'm good with that. And I think that was part of my exposure to the apartment therapy audience and also to the HGTV audience, because there are a lot of DIYers in those groups. But you know, I like sharing the knowledge, because I think when people understand that there is a process, then they're like, oh, okay, I never thought of it that way. And yeah, so I think there's marketing, but it's also interesting you're talking about writing, because the publishing world right now is a little tricky, because the magazines are going away and consolidating and figuring out how to make money. And so I think there are some fewer opportunities to get published in print. I think there are a lot of opportunities to have your work seen electronically, but I don't think it has the same shelf life. Sometimes I'm still a big fan of print, but
right.
You know, how do you get that stuff published? So I'm working on some ideas where I might apply the writing a little bit harder on my own behalf than I've done before. I've done it a lot for other people on Apartment Therapy, so it's time to turn that pen back at me. So maybe this was exactly the kick in the pants that I needed to actually do that thing I've been thinking about. I'll come back and talk about it when I do it. If Lori will have me back, I'll come back and talk about it.
We'll definitely have you back.
We don't do kick in the pants at Creative Alchemist. We do magic. We turn lead into gold. Come on.
I've always loved that word, alchemy. I've always loved that word.
See, Patrick, well, it's symbiotic.
It sounds like you're more educational, right? So, because I love your analogy of how you may be able to buy all the ingredients to make this perfect meal, except you haven't been trained how to put them together with precision to get the kind of taste and presentation you want. But you have all the ingredients, though.
I talked about it as a luxury. You know, I think interior design is a luxury purchase, but I've struggled with this a lot also since the Apartment Therapy days. It's like, but there are a lot of people who like want really nice homes, but they just don't have the kind of budget that allows an interior designer to make any money. And it's like, I think that's an audience I don't mind talking to. And, you also never know like what comes down the road for them. And sometimes that,
right,
might be an opportunity, but I don't mind talking about it, even if it's not going to necessarily lead me, you know, to a sale per se.
Okay. The love for the industry, the love of the art. So, and I hear you love the art so much that you're actually could be coined as the designer's designer.
I'll take that coin. I'll take any coin. No, but I think your use of the word art is really dead on. I think I used to think of myself when I was in the graphic design world. I used to think of myself as a graphic design artist. I was an artist because I went to art school. And again, my sister, when I started to do interior design work, I forget what the scenario was that led us up to the conversation, but she's like, you're still an artist. And it's like, and it was a light bulb. It was a really light bulb moment for me. Cause like,
wow.
Okay. Yeah, this is an art. And I say that often to clients, you know, this is an art. It's not a science. You know, there's not just one way to solve it. But I love that word associated with the profession. So thanks for thinking of it that way.
You're welcome. So we're coming in on closing minutes. If someone would like to contact the designer's designer, how do they do that?
The best way, let's see. I'm ashamed to say that I don't have a website right now. And I've had thoughts about it and drafts of it. And, you know, it's one of those things when you have the time you know, one of those scenarios. But anyhow, I'm just apologizing. I think you can find me on Instagram and you can
I'm sorry, I'm going to be rude. So you can say you're like a Bugatti, and have you ever seen a commercial on TV for a Bugatti?
Right.
Everyone okay. knows about it, though.
Well, it's kind of funny you say that because it, yeah, I would say that I like that analogy. I'll take that too. But on, I keep a portfolio, a limited portfolio on house.com. So it's Patrick J. Hamilton on House. And then Instagram, it's Patrick J. Hamilton Designs. And my blog.
So you're on social media.
Yeah, I'm social media has been very good to me. Never in that straight line kind of way, but it's been very good for me.
Okay. Perfect.
And I have to say, if you don't already, I highly recommend following you on Facebook because you're not only informative, but you're entertaining and funny.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say you often post about food as well.
My Facebook life is pretty wide open. So people have asked me, like, why do you have a personal page and not a professional page? And I partly is the regulations on Facebook that Facebook imposes on professional pages are a little bit limiting. Their goal is to make some money, which is understandable. But also because, you know, if you don't like the person, you're not going to hire them to help you with
uh-huh.
delivery.
Right.
If it's just not. And so, and I don't want to pretend that I'm not the person I am. Like, you know, I had a client one time who was showing me, he wanted to show some friends of his, my Facebook page. And I just that afternoon, and he's not on Facebook, but just that afternoon I had vented about his project on Facebook. And I said, like, what kind of person doesn't think they, like, what kind of grown-up doesn't need a coffee table? And I had just had that conversation with him in that afternoon, and he, like, logged onto Facebook to, like, tout me to his friends, and he saw it, and it was, like, for a hot second it was, like, kind of embarrassing, and then I thought, no, I'm going to totally own this, because he called me out on it. I said, tell me, like, what adult doesn't, like, you're an adult, you should have a coffee table. I had the choice of like either like cowering because and you know being embarrassed or owning it. Like in that one moment, I decided to own it, and it worked. So
very funny.
So what happens on Facebook does not stay in Facebook.
Oh, correct. No, the assumption with social media is that like. You know, if you would be okay with someone reading it back to you in public on at a trial, that's how you have to sort of put everything through that filter because it's like I don't care what settings you impose on it, it's public. It's public knowledge.
Very true. Patrick, thank you so much for being our guest. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you. And before we close up, if anybody, please remember it is fundraising for leukemia, running for Woman of the Year, LGC Interiors. Please find me on social media and donate or buy your tickets to our comedy show or our concert. Have a great week. We'll see you next Thursday. And Patrick, again, thank you.
Thanks again. It was a blast talking to you both.
Great. Thanks a lot, everyone. Thanks, Patrick. Take care.
Thank you.